Now more than ever. Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price. You want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's. We help. You save. Price match applies to same item. Current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at Lowe's.com/lowest price guarantee.
I'm John Batchelor with Max Boone, the author of the new Reagan biography, His Life and Legend. It is a cloudy day, is my memory, in early spring 1981. Ronald Reagan makes a speech in Washington. He's leaving the building. Shots are fired, and Reagan is hit. A number of other members of his staff are hit. And this becomes a crisis that Max presents very dramatically. This is 69 days into the administration, and Reagan conducts himself heroically with humor and attempting to ease the tension all around him, especially his wife, who is, as Nancy rushes to the hospital to be with him, he is very close to death often, several times. Max's presentation is extremely moving. At the same time, Max, I'm interested in what happens afterwards. He recovers amazingly. And that leads to success in Washington. What is it that allows him to then move on his domestic ambitions so quickly?
Well, I call the chapter on his shooting finest hour, and it really was Reagan's finest hour. Remember, this was Reagan had never been in combat. He'd spent all of World War II on a soundstage. But here he was acting very heroically after being shot and joking with the doctors, saying, "I hope you're all Republicans," telling Nancy, "Honey, I forgot to duck." And of course, people were horrified by the shooting. And he came very close to death, much closer than his aides had let on at the time. But then when people heard about how he had behaved after being shot, and he really behaved, you know, kind of like a wisecracking Warner Brothers hero of the 1930s, except this was not a soundstage, this was not scripted, this was real life, being shot hurt a lot, he was close to death, but he kept his good humor. He kept his head about him. And I think that gave him a huge popularity boost and really cemented this bond between Ronald Reagan and the American people that really lasted throughout his presidency. And the most immediate political benefit was a boost in his popularity rating and also a huge boost in the chances of passage for his first budget, which cut spending and cut taxes. And the prospects for Reaganomics when Reagan was shot were still very much uncertain. But after, you know, he came back to the White House, he spoke to a joint session of Congress where people gave him rapturous applause. And by that point, it was kind of a foregone conclusion that his program was going to sail through Congress.
Yes, again and again, Max, you are very detailed on what the facts are in the economy and what the Laffer curve does and what Reaganomics does. But I'm reminded again and again about the Hollywood line. I believe William Goldman wrote it for The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. When the facts replace the legend, print the legend. That's Ronald Reagan speechifying. He speaks legend, not facts.
Yes, absolutely. And Reagan's superpower was kind of the ability to see the world as he wanted it to be, not necessarily as it was, but also to convince other people that to see the world the way he saw it. And one example of that, if you cite Reaganomics, is that his program was to cut taxes dramatically and raise defense spending dramatically. But while doing that, he also expected that he would eliminate the budget deficit. And no serious economist thought this you could possibly do that. But Reagan convinced himself that cutting taxes would actually stimulate so much economic activity that the government would actually get more money than it had at a higher tax rate. And that, of course, turned out not to be true. And so when he left the presidency, the one regret that he expressed was he said he was very sorry that the budget deficit had gone up because he had promised to balance the budget by 1983. Never happened. Instead, budget deficit is larger than ever. But it's kind of amazing that he ever imagined that a program of tax cuts and spending increases could possibly result in a balanced budget. But yet he did. And this was something he became very convinced of.
The Troika, we need to name them because they were so powerful in the first term. All the work in the first term pays off. but it's their agenda, and we're talking about the domestic agenda. We'll come to the foreign policy in a moment. James Baker, Ed Meese, and Mike Deaver are responsible for the success of the first term. Is it because they cut down or they eliminated people getting access to the president? Is that the secret? Because there have been presidencies since where they're back and forth about access to the president. Well, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Well, I think the big picture, I would say Ronald Reagan was a great leader, but he was a poor manager. He was not somebody who was deep into the weeds of government policy, and he really needed people who could manage for him. And he found that with, I think it was really Jim Baker, who was by far the most important of the troika. And the appointment of Jim Baker, I think, was actually in many ways the most important decision that Reagan made as president. Very unexpected, because normally, presidents appoint some crony as their White House chief of staff. But Baker had, in fact, worked against Reagan, had worked for Ford in 76, had worked for Bush in 1980, and yet Reagan still appointed him. And then, of course, Reagan still wanted a place for his old California aides, Ed Meese and Mike Deaver. And so thereby he created the troika. And many people initially expected that Ed Meese, who was seen as being more conservative and more doctrinaire than Jim Baker, many people expected that Ed Meese would emerge as the most powerful member of the troika because he had been Reagan's chief of staff in Sacramento. But in fact, that turned out not to be the case at all, because Ed Meese was very disorganized, not very clued into the ways of Washington, whereas Jim Baker, nicknamed the Velvet Hammer, became one of the shrewdest operators Washington had ever seen. And Mike Deaver, who was an old advertising man and really Reagan's image meister, he threw his influence behind Baker. And so, the talk of the troika was really misleading, because it wasn't three equal power centers. It was really Baker accumulating more and more power as the presidency went on, and Meese being more and more sidelined.
The other significant achievement in the first 2 years, it is August of 1981, and Ronald Reagan made a remark during the campaign about a woman on the Supreme Court, and he does it, Sandra Day O'Connor. And that was seen as a great success at the time. Is that accurate, Max? We have about a minute.
Yes, absolutely. He had agreed to appoint a woman because he, like many other Republicans, he faced a gender gap, and he appointed Sandra Day O'Connor, even though many right-wingers were fearful that she would vote to uphold Roe v. Wade, which ultimately she did. But Reagan was not an absolutist at all and didn't really care that much about abortion. His primary concern was about not setting criminals free, and he bonded with O'Connor over her background growing up on a ranch, and so he was delighted to appoint her.
I smiled when you reported the Senate vote 99-0.
Hard to imagine today, right?
It's impossible, Max. 99-0. I also like the fact that Senator Day O'Connor's name emerged because she was, as you describe an old flame of what becomes Chief Justice Rehnquist. Was he on the court at the time? He was, wasn't he?
Yes, he was, yeah.
So Sandra Day O'Connor joins, and the domestic achievement of the taxes and the deregulation, and Ronald Reagan telling a story that the American people wanted to hear. We're going to turn to the Cold War. This is Reagan, His Life and Legend. Max Boot is the author. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.